right, guys, this morning I want you guys to think about a time in your life when you were really afraid of something that you knew you had to do. So think of that moment. For me, something comes to mind when I was really afraid, but I knew there was no other way I had to do it. There's some people in this room who can relate to this exact same experience, and that is childbirth. I'm uniquely qualified to speak on that from the stage. I've had three daughters, and if you haven't had a child, let me let you know on a little secret, and that is when you come to that day, it's a bit terrifying, especially the first time you did it, because, you know, there's a reason why they show delivery videos in health class to our teenagers, right? It's a little bit frightening. There's some scary things to it. There's a lot of talk of pain, and you don't know how much pain that's going to be. And so, you know, I remember the first time I knew I had to do it. There was no other way, but it was a little bit frightening. And the first one I had, my first daughter, was 41 hours of labor. So that's unusual. Usually they don't last that long, but it was a tough one. What's even crazier is less than 2 years later, I willingly chose to do it again and have my second daughter, which is kind of crazy. What is the motivation for that? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And yet women, we do it over and over again, right? At this stage of history, most of us willingly choose and sometimes even struggle to be pregnant, knowing that it will lead to the day where we have to deliver through pain. So, you know, I have a friend who has four daughters of her own, and then she has twice carried twins and delivered those as a surrogate. It's crazy stuff. I don't understand that kind of sacrifice. But although I am past, thankfully, the days of delivering babies, I still have fears. I don't want to do things I know I have to do or things that I even know are best for me. Maybe you can relate to that as well. There are times that we are certain that God is asking us to make a sacrifice in our lives, maybe to give something up, to make a change, to take a step of faith, but it's frightening. What do we do when we struggle to make the sacrifice? This week, we'll look at a moment in Jesus' life when he was clearly afraid. Over this series, Emmanuel, we have seen how Jesus' experience here on earth changes how he relates to us and how we relate to him. He's not a God who doesn't understand our struggles in life. Instead, he's Emmanuel, God with us. He is with us in the human experience. He can relate. He remembers the emotions we feel each day. And yet, he lived such a different life than anyone who's ever lived. Today is the day that Christians around the world will celebrate the day that Jesus arrived in Jerusalem, riding a donkey as crowds worshiped and shouted praises to him. They shouted, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." But we're going to take a moment to look at a different time in Jesus' life, just a few days later, a moment when the crowds disappear and he's all alone. It's late at night. He's eaten the Passover meal with his friends. He's washed their feet. He's prayed with them. He's acknowledged to Judas that he knows that he will soon betray him. And he knows that the time has come, the time that he has come to earth to accomplish. It's about here. He will be betrayed and beaten, and he will hang on a cross and suffer in pain for hours. It's all so close to him. The labor pains have begun. And so he takes his three best friends, Peter, James, and John, with him and goes to a place called Gethsemane. So we're going to read together in Matthew. And as we read this passage, I ask us all to kind of listen for the emotions that Jesus is expressing. So when we begin, it says, "Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. And then he returned to his disciples and he found them sleeping. Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter. Now I want to stop here for a moment. I imagine you're feeling uncomfortable imagining Jesus at this moment. He's all alone, and he's overwhelmed with sorrow, and it's hard to even read this passage, even if you've read it dozens of times before, because his pain, it's hard to watch. It's his isolation, it's hard to imagine. It isn't comfortable for us. Sorrow isn't comfortable to be around. Maybe his friends are clueless, or maybe they just can't really handle to see Jesus in so much pain. They can't handle the rawness of Jesus' words when he says, My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. For all of us, we kind of just want to run away from that. We don't want to see him in so much pain. Now, I don't know what it's like to know that you're going to die in a few days. I know that I fear that day. It's coming for all of us. And for me, I fear the pain. I fear that I would be able to do it with dignity and strength. But I do know a little bit about sorrow. This past year, my husband and I got a phone call that our very dear friend, Renee Hudson, would probably die in the next couple of days from stage 4 lung cancer. And so we rushed to be with her and her family. And it was shocking to see, I hadn't seen her for a while, to see her. And it was the first time I'd ever been in the room with somebody I love dearly take their last breath. It's a profound moment. And even I was kind of uncomfortable with my own pain, my own grief. I wanted to run away from it. And I understand that other people were kind of uncomfortable with it as well, which I get because it's uncomfortable. Sorrow is uncomfortable to be around. But I learned something in my time of grief, as I still grieve for my friend Renee. What I learned was people who had experienced that kind of loss were able to be comforting in a different way to me. Many of you know Kimberly Monzon. She's a very dear friend to me. But you also may know that she has experienced a lot of loss in her own life. She lost both of her parents to lung cancer. She's lost a brother and a lot of other loss, unfortunately. And so for her, she was such a comfort to me because it didn't make her feel uncomfortable to talk about pain and grief and death. She could just kind of sit there with me and let me talk about it, and there was no uncomfortableness in the moment. And I think about that when I read about Jesus and his sorrow, because for us, Jesus is Emmanuel. He's not afraid to be near us when we're in pain and in grief. He knows what it feels like, and there's no discomfort. He can be Emmanuel for us. And even though it's hard to watch him at this moment, to see his pain, it also brings us comfort because we know he understands what it's like to be in pain, to be sorrowful and troubled like so many of us experience in this life. So let's continue reading. He went away a second time and prayed, My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed a third time, saying the same thing. Now, as you read this, you might start getting a little annoyed with his friends that they keep falling asleep. It seems like Jesus is either annoyed or it's just hurting his feelings, but it's bothering him too. And my husband has a lot of gifts, and one of his gifts is he can sleep through anything as well. Years of the baby years, he could sleep through the babies crying. You know, he can sleep through my kids arguing now, the sirens, the honking horns, alarm clocks. He can sleep through it all. And, you know, during the baby years, I remember getting up, feeding the baby. He was going to work so he could sleep through. And I, you know, got up with the baby. And then he'd wake up in the morning kind of like clueless that I was up so much. And I just remember kind of being in awe of it. Like, there was a little annoyance, but there was a lot of like, why can't I do that? Like, I just wake up anytime the kids made a sound, I was up. And I think Jesus is kind of feeling that as well, like this wish that he could just relax and sleep like his friends are. But he's so troubled. He knows what's ahead, and they're a little bit unaware. And we also see that Jesus goes and says the same prayer to God three times. Three times he goes. It's almost like he's asking God for a different response. A hope that maybe it'll be different if I ask God this time to remove the cup from me. It shows us his fear, and it shows us his humanness. Father, if it's not possible for this cup, and this cup refers to suffering, if this suffering to be taken away, unless I drink it, unless I suffer, then may your will be done. Jesus knows that he's going to suffer and that he must die, but his humanity is still afraid. He knows what's at stake. He knows why he's going to do it. So what allows him to overcome his fear? Well, it's clear in 1 John 4:18 what makes us overcome our fear. It says, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear." Jesus knew why he must suffer. His perfect love is what helped to drive out the fear. It was his perfect love for us, for you, and for me. When we read in Hebrews, it says, "During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death," crying out to God. "And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered, and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obeyed him." Jesus' fear and his anguish, it might bring us pain to watch, but it should bring us comfort because he chose to do it for us. Let us be comforted in the knowledge that his perfect love for us is what led him to willingly suffer and die. He died for you and for me. And so when we see him return again to his disciples there asleep, we see a new Jesus empowered to do what he needs to do. He says, "Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come. The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. So rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer.'" It shows us clearly that love has overcome fear for him. His love for you has overcome his fear. And that is why there is joy in the pain of childbirth, because love for our babies overcomes fear. Love is the biggest motivator for all of us. And that is why we can choose to make sacrifices. Today, if you're struggling to make a sacrifice that God is calling you to make, and I imagine as soon as I say those words that ideas of what God is calling you to do might come to mind. If you're struggling to make that sacrifice, let love be the motivation for you. God's love for you and your love for God, whether it's financially sacrificing by giving regularly for the first time, let love be the motivation. If it's the fear of the commitment to strive to forgive somebody who has harmed you, let love be your motivation. If God is calling you to sacrifice your comfort and to serve in a way that you're afraid of, then let God's love for you motivate you today. Or maybe God is calling you to make a public commitment to follow him by being baptized. Well, if that's true, I pray that you would let love of God motivate you to do that today. Let love overcome fear. Because here's the thing, It's not enough for us to say we love somebody. We have to show it with our actions. Love is a verb, and Jesus showed us that with his life. In 30 Days with Jesus, F. Lagarde Smith writes, "Love was the motivation for Jesus emptying himself of the glory of heaven to become a broken sacrifice on our behalf. Yet virtually always for Jesus, love was not a noun, but a verb. It was compassion in action. It was relationship with interaction." For Jesus, love was not merely a lofty ideal, but it was a lifestyle. So when we consider to choose to sacrifice for God, is love something we say, or is it our lifestyle? It shouldn't be about guilt or shame. It should be about love. It should be about Jesus' love, his perfect love for us that motivates us to sacrifice even when we're afraid. Recently, I had dinner with a new member of our church, Jocelyn. She's new to this church, and she's also new to New York City. Like many of us, she came to New York City to pursue a dream, a big dream. But when she got here, kind of the fear of the bigness and the, you know, New York City can be overwhelming, and it almost overwhelmed her with fear. And so her mother flew from California to be here with her, to just kind of help her put her on her feet, to help her get through the fear. And I was just kind of really struck by that sacrifice and just their relationship. As a mom, I was really impressed with Jocelyn's love and her relationship with her mother. And so I continued to kind of listen to her talk about her mom and just continued to be impressed. She talked about how her mom came to America as a teenager from Guatemala, seeking a better life. She struggled to learn English, to go to high school, to make a life for herself here. And that's what she did. She married Jocelyn's father, had two beautiful children, worked hard to make a home for them. And as we were talking, she talked about how her mom was a house cleaner in LA, but they live in San Bernardino because that was a safer place for them to be raised. And I don't know much about California, and so I said, "What kind of commute is that? That might be a long commute." She said, 3 hours. Her mom gets up and leaves by 5 o'clock, 3 times a week, to get there at 8 o'clock, works as a housekeeper, and then returns 3 hours. I had the same reaction that you did. I was just amazed by that kind of sacrifice. And I asked, how long has she done that? Over 20 years. Over 20 years, she's made that sacrifice. And as I talked to Jocelyn and I heard her talk about her dreams and how hard it is for her to pursue them here, I saw that her mom's and her dad's sacrifice gave her strength, gave her the strength to pursue and to overcome her fear. Because perfect love overcomes fear. So whatever you fear today, whatever God is calling you to that is scary, let his love for you motivate you to trust, to overcome your fear. Now this morning I began with stories of childbirth, so I think I'm going to end today with a story from a book that I read called Call the Midwife. You might have heard that it's a BBC series that's on PBS that's based from the books. I actually love the show, and so Larry had bought me the book. I read the book. I didn't realize that the book is actually autobiographical. The main character, Jenny, she's telling real stories, real characters. They're all real. And in the story, Jenny, the main character, she moves to this poor part of London right after World War II, so in the 50s and then later in the 60s. She works as a midwife with these nuns in the poorest part of London. And she isn't quite prepared for the poverty. She gets there, she's kind of, you know, grown up in a nice neighborhood, and it kind of offends her almost when she's, you know, in there with all the poverty and these women who are struggling to make it and take care of their kids. But she grows to kind of just be impressed by them and just respect their strength and how they sacrifice for their children. But there's another story, and that's her own faith story that grows throughout the book and throughout living with the nuns. She comes almost by mistake to live with these nuns, and she doesn't really have a faith of her own, and so she really struggles to understand, why would they make the sacrifice? Why would they give everything up and live in poverty? They can have no possessions and just struggle to take care of the poorest people. And one nun in particular really strikes her. Her name is Sister Monica Joan. She's just an odd kind of character. She's wise, ornery, a little senile, all mixed in together. She often quotes poetry instead of answering questions. She's just kind of a unique bird. But Jenny really likes spending time with her, and she can't quite understand her sacrifice, because unlike everybody else, she came from the richest class in England. She was from the aristocracy, so she gave up everything. Her family, you know, pretended like she didn't exist, and she could take nothing with her. And so Jenny just couldn't quite understand what would make her do that. And so she asked herself, what had impelled Sister Monica Joan to abandon a privileged life for one of hardship, working in the slums of London's Docklands? And so she asked her, was it the love of people? She says, of course not. How can you love ignorant and brutish people who you don't even know? Can anyone love filth or squalor or lice or rats? Who can love aching weariness and carry on working in spite of it? One cannot love these things. One can only love God and through his grace come to love his people. And so Jenny asks her how she knew that God was calling her to make the sacrifice. And she did the same thing where she answered in poetry. She quotes this poem by Francis Thompson called The Hounds of Heaven. And in it, it repeats over and over again this phrase, I fled him, I fled him. This idea that she tried to run away from what God was calling her to do. And of course, Jenny wasn't getting what she was trying to tell her. So she said, what does that mean? And she gets very cross and she says, read the Gospels. There's no other way. Don't pester me with your questions. Just read the Gospels and go with God. And so Jenny says, those words, go with God, were the beginning of her faith, and she went and read the Gospels. You see, Sister Monica Jones, her sacrifice, it puzzled Jenny because she didn't know God. She had never met Jesus. And there was a time that Sister Monica Jones fled as well. She ran away from God, and then she met Jesus by reading the Gospels, by reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and seeing Jesus' words and his actions, and it changed everything for her. It was because of her love for Jesus and his life and his sacrifice that allowed her to sacrifice for others. And it was her sacrifices over the years that caused Jenny to pursue and to meet Jesus. Now, our pain and our fears are real this morning. Following Jesus, it's frightening because he often calls us to do things that can be painful. It can take sacrifice. But Jesus is also Emmanuel. He understands our struggle. And he shows us in Gethsemane that it's fine to be honest with God about our feelings and our fear. And he also shows us something that he can be comforted. We can be comforted by God in our fear. In Luke, it tells us that God sent an angel to comfort and strengthen Jesus before he returns and says, let's go, it's time. He's comforted by an angel. And so I believe that Jesus wants to strengthen us as well. He wants to strengthen us for the sacrifices ahead of us. So it's time to be honest with him about our fear and allow God to love us and let that love overcome our fear. Now, just as Jenny watched the nuns' love for God displayed in their sacrifices for others, people are watching us as well. They're watching to see if our love, the words we say, if they're really backed up by action. Jesus loved us with action, with sacrifice, and that is what he's calling us to do as well. So I pray that our sacrifices would cause others to pursue Jesus, to meet him, and to know his love. And I pray that God will strengthen us to face our fear, and that it will be overcome with our love for him. Let's pray. God, I just pray right now that you would speak to us and tell us what you want us to do, what kind of actions you're calling us to. Those things that we might want to ignore, those things that we're afraid of. Lord, I pray that you would come and comfort and strengthen us, just as you were strengthened. Send your angels to come and comfort us, Lord. And I pray that we would remember your fear, but also your determination to do what you needed to do to save us, Lord. And I pray that that love for us would motivate us. It's in your name we pray. Amen.